One, two. I'll start all over. Welcome, everyone, to the operations. We do not have a quorum, but we are still going to go ahead and have discussion because we don't have items that need to be voted on other than the minutes. So we need a quorum from the members of the committee as opposed to the board members being present. So until Reggie gets here, we won't have an official quorum. But that won't stop us from discussing the items that are on the agenda. Yes.
Am I an official member of the committee yet?
I don't think so, right?
No.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I got a note from the chairman. She'll be sending you a note.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Well, we look forward to having you.
All right.
So okay. So what we're going to go ahead and do is do a roll call vote, and then we will get started with the items on the agenda. Ms. Franklin?
Okay. Mr. Bell?
Present.
General Schwartz?
Retired.
Present. Retired in one, but were you retired there? We're going to use you here.
Ms. Lewis?
Yeah.
Mr. Felton? Dr. Jarvis? Mr. Shelton?
Here.
Mr. Mills?
Here.
Mr. Chair, you did not have a quorum at this time.
All righty. Thank you very much, Ms. Franklin. So because we do not have a quorum, we are not going to be able to do the approval of the minutes. And so we're going to step into the items that are on the agenda. We will go into an executive session for two of the items that are on the agenda today. That's the changes to the performance management and progressive discipline, and then also to the 4250 Connecticut Avenue. And once we go into executive session, we will not be returning to the group. So that after we finish the two items that are on here, we will be able to disperse this formal part of the meeting. Okay, so with that, the first item that is on the agenda is the fall 2017 new student update.
Yes, good evening, Chairman and committee members. I'll ask Mr. Sanchez to come up here in a second to walk you through fall 2017 new student report. I think you'll be hopefully pleased, but I do want to point out I handed off to each of you. As you know, we had the fact book, which is for the whole fiscal year of 2016. And what we're going to be doing going forward is each semester, we're going to be doing a quick fact sheet for each semester. And so you'll be seeing these coming out. We're trying to get better on the timing of them, so I apologize. We wanted to get these out sooner. But these are also online as well. I got a few extra copies, I think, back here for those in the audience so we can put them out. But these are available online. You can do fact sheet spring 2017. And so you get just a quick snapshot of where we are with our enrollment for the spring of the 20. And these are post-purge numbers, I should point out. So that's, again, another reason for them coming out a little late. But if there's no questions on that, I'm going to turn over to Mr. Sanchez again. The challenge, what should I say, the fun part of being in his job in enrollment management, he's always got a number of semesters he's having to look at. And so we want to kind of have you in that same cycle that he's in. And so the cycle he's in right now is thinking about the fall 2017 enrollment. And, again, our goal, as we told you when we started this, when I started this a year and a half ago, was to get to a cycle where we are starting to look at making offers, making admissions decisions much earlier in the cycle than we traditionally have, always recognizing that we have a certain segment of our students that will be walk-ups and will come to the table later in the game. We accept that, but that doesn't mean those that we can go and make, if you will, in the regular cycle. And Mr. Sanchez will even tell you, we want to get to the point where we're doing early admits, or we're even talking about December, doing offers in a December time frame, and then in the traditional, you know, March, April time frame, which all the other schools do it in. But you'll see, we've already started to see a number of offers here coming for the fall as we go. The last thing I'll say, again, through his leadership, we're going to be getting next, what, few weeks, Dwight, the cabinet, all the cabinet members, he's assigned us to six or seven, eight schools. And
35.
Yeah, and we're each going to go as a cohort. We're taking some members from his office, some members from Dr. Latham's office, as a caravan, as they're calling it, and we're going to actually make offers. We're going to hand offers. He's working with the counselors and the principals of these various schools, and we will bring all those individuals that have offers to the university, and we'll be making them offers. The president, myself, and all the other cabinet members will be doing that in the next few weeks.
Excellent.
Offers of admissions to the University of the District of Columbia, and in some cases, scholarship offers as well.
fund.
Yes, so it's offers of admissions as well as in some cases scholarship offers.
Just a quick question. How often will this fact sheet be coming out?
The plan is to come out each semester.
Each semester?
Yeah,
okay.
after we've done the PERS. So, again, the next wave will be before your August meeting. There'll be one for the summer semester.
Okay. And I know that it's available online, but do we also push this, like, to put this in the hands of high school counselors?
We're beginning to do that.
Okay, good, so that they can know and then the community colleges in the area so that they can, okay.
And could I see how it compares to the previous, like, semester, like spring 2016
yeah.
comparison? To
no question. So that's, again, this type of feedback, is, again, yeah. this is our first time doing this, so
yeah.
that type of work we plan on doing it. So giving me the feedback of how we can improve the visuals as well as the type of data, but no question.
Yeah.
No question,
okay.
sir.
Sure.
These are
going
to be criteria that you give these offers.
In terms of just the scholarships you're given, are they going to be why are we giving them? They're going to be. Do they have enough information that we'll be looking at? You know, in the DC step, you had a certain
DC
criteria.
Up,
you have a certain criteria. Is for these ones, are they going to be the similar criteria or going to be different?
Yes. So the scholarship is for DC resident, metro resident, and international and other states individuals. So therefore, each of those segments has a specific requirement for eligibility of the institutional scholarship.
So
Dwight Sanchez, Associate Vice President for Enrollment Management. Basically, this is a snapshot, per se, and as you can see how we compare to last year, this was written in February 24th. So you can see that across nation, applicant pool is decreasing. In particular, the University of the District of Columbia is in the northeastern region of the United States, and that region is projected to lose anywhere from 5 to 10% of high school graduates between now until 2025.
Mr. Chairman, excuse me, what is this a document?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And so what did you say we're looking at?
So we're looking at the first page. So I started off by telling you the applicant pool is down. So the first page right here.
But you're looking at this.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. I think she was referencing
that. Yeah, yeah. That was just me telling you about this stuff. He's the document that's in your board packet.
In the board packet.
Okay, so you're looking at fall 2017 new student report.
Yes. Correct.
Okay.
All right. So if you look at 2024-16 versus 2024, rather, February 24, 2017, we've explicated the campuses. You have the community college and the flagship. And you can see the applicant variance from year to year, term to term. And one of the most notable difference is it's a 28% decline in applicants.
I don't see term to term.
Okay. So if you look, trustee member.
Yes.
So you see where it says campus?
Yes.
It says applicants?
Yes.
It says admitted?
Yes.
So the term is fall.
Yeah.
All right. So
so fall.
Okay.
So
but term to term for me means you're saying all the terms.
Okay. So I was meant, okay, fall.
That's what he's comparing against 2017 versus 2016.
I understand what but you're not comparing term to term. This is the fall term for both years.
Yes.
Yes.
So fall 16 to fall 17.
Okay, I got it.
All right. So if you look at that, you'll see the applicants in fall 2016, Madam Board Member, it was 1728 versus 1248 now. So that's a 28% decline in applicant pool. However, as you go across, you look at the admitted cohort, you see there were 346 at this time, or that time reported, versus 817. That's 136% increase. And then you go across and you look at confirm. At the time of last year, it was 37 versus 108. That translates to 291% increase. So what that tells you is even though there's a constricted applicant pool, it allows us to manage the engagement and do more scoring that impacts the ultimate yield. In essence, I'm able to now tell the likelihood of a student actually enrolling versus having a larger pool of 7,000 and trying to really contact and assess the likelihood of them enrolling. Okay? But to the point I was mentioning earlier.
I was just going to say, you started off saying that there was going to be a 5 to 10% drop in high school students.
Yeah, so nationally.
Nationally.
There's going to be a 5 to 10% decrease in high school applicants in the northeastern region of the United States.
Right.
And I'm saying we have begun to see that when you look at the comparison of the applicant pool from 2014 to now.
What does that mean? Does it mean they're not applying, or they're just not applying to schools in the Northeast?
So what that means is the students who are actually going to be going into the high school, that number is going to be declining.
Uh-huh.
So therefore, it's going to be less graduates for the next 10 to 15 years, okay, based on WICHE, National Clearinghouse, and the Department of Education statistics.
Okay.
Okay? So then when you look at that, it also tells you, though there's going to be a decline in applicant pool, it also tells you the ethnicities, which you can see what is called a slight increase. So as the article says, you will see, quote-unquote, more brown students than you would see more Caucasian students. So then all institutions have to prepare for the decline in Caucasian students, the increase in an older, non-traditional, multicultural population, mm-hmm, if that makes mm-hmm sense.
Okay.
Okay? Okay? All right. Is that clear?
Yeah, but it would be nice to have the article. Can you send it to us?
Sure, I can send it to you. Yeah. All right.
And so, I'm sorry, you're probably going to get to this, but why is it such a dramatic drop in applicants, do you think?
Okay, sure. I mean, particularly the university. Okay,
yeah,
so we are using Recruiter,
yeah,
which is a new CRM that we've been employing for the last 2 years.
CRM is?
CRM, Customer Relations Management Portal, that allows us to engage you as an applicant. Mm-hmm. In that regard, Trustee, before the implementation of this system, it was open. So you could have applied, didn't pay your application fee, didn't submit particular requisite items. So then we have an empty application that would count as an applicant.
Right.
With this new CRM now, after you've done the application, before it moves forward, you have to do the fee, you have to submit various items. That allows us to score your level of seriousness,
right,
or interest in truly matriculating into the system, or rather the university. Okay. That's how we get to this point. Okay? All right.
Excuse me. You're counting specifically fee students. Students have to pay their fee before they're counted in the arithmetic of your inclusion.
That's one.
Okay.
So we have the students who are non-waived, where we waive the fees?
Okay, that's what I'm trying to get to. I didn't want to lose that concept. Yeah. You're waiving fees at what levels?
So let me give you an example. Uh-huh. There are two examples under which we would waive fees. If we were to go to a recruiting event, and we were allowed to make on-site admissions, the fees would be waived. Those applications would then be brought into the institution by way of being at that event, and then our information processors would input that into the system. The other one is the partnership that we have with certain DCPS schools. Because of socioeconomic levels,
okay,
and whether it's, a Title III,
that's okay, I understand
all
that
of
part.
Those type of schools, yeah, mm-hmm, we have particular school waivers that's also identified.
That's what I was trying to make,
yes,
sure, is that the schools still have a cadre of waivers,
yes,
that they can use for the University,
right,
of District of Columbia.
Correct.
So that it's not all who have paid, but paid with waivers available.
Sure.
And the counselor makes a decision about who would need the economic support based on whatever the criteria is for that.
For submission,
that
right, correct.
Okay.
So let me give you another example so we can make sure there's a clear line of demarcation. 2013, Trustee, you would have over roughly 7,500 applicants. You remember those numbers,
yeah,
right?
I do. Mm-hmm.
But we would have incomplete upwards of 4,000 applications, which would give the implication that admissions is in processing.
Mm-hmm.
What was actually happening was these were just everybody and their grandmothers submitting an application without any true intention of enrolling.
Yes.
With this new system now, one of the things we're getting much better at is basically scoring the likelihood of an applicant enrolling. So for example, and then this is the last point so I don't lose you. In 2013, our yield rate was roughly 50 to 60%. Our real yield rate now is actually 71%.
Everybody gets yield with yield when we...
But my concern is one of the application systems that we had in the school district of the District of Columbia as part of the senior junior education process was the completion and submission of an application to the University of the District of Columbia as your birthright.
Right. Mm.
And so that no matter what youngster you were, if you were graduating, you had a university that had accepted you. Okay? Now, if you got a waiver, you could get a waiver.
Sure.
You could get a payment from the school. I know at Dunbar and Easton we made payments for students so that they could, if they had to make a payment, we would make it. But the objective was for every kid to have completed an application as part of their transition from junior to senior,
right,
so that they would know they had a college opportunity if they if and when they graduate. And that's what I was concerned about when you didn't mention.
So that's in the college.
But I want to make sure I understand. Maybe someone's missing the trustees. Are you recommending that we work with the district to ensure that all rising seniors are submitting an application to the University of the District of Columbia?
I encourage you to, because from my experience, a lot of the youngsters dream it, but don't know any of the steps to do it. Mm-hmm. And as an administrator trying to get them to see themselves in college, filling out the application, looking what you've done, making it sound like, when you say babysitting, you think babysitting is nothing. Mm-hmm. But when you do your application, managing young children for working families is an important skill, but it's how you say it. So you don't want to say you were just a babysitter, you know, a couple nights a week, but you watch your little brothers and sisters every day for 20 years. You know how to manage a group of kids, but you don't. You need to be able to fill out that paperwork, and that was the first piece of paperwork we wanted every student to do, so that they would have it in their portfolio as they prepare to go to the next level, and I didn't want to lose that.
So we haven't lost that trustee.
Okay.
I was going to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So what you have just explicated is what was the case in 11, 12, and 13 with the implementation of this recruiter, which is a CRMN. We've now set it up where if you're not in the DCPS system, which we've already have the specific codes for them, you have to submit an application fee. Given the partnerships we have with DC, because you can apply, and we have a partnership where transcripts, I can call a school, and the transcript now through Parchment is uploaded into a system.
Okay.
So all of that is already in effect. All I am trying to explicate or establish with you is what we are doing better now is instead of getting 10 applications, we can get 4 and enroll 3 rather than getting 10 and only enrolling 2.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Just a quick question. Is that process still actively going on in the public schools? Where?
In some schools.
Okay.
I can't speak like I could several years ago.
Right.
That was an automatic process for juniors. And in the transitions, it has, as the principals have changed.
Right.
The connection with the university, one of the first conversations I had was about Eastern. The counselor didn't know we existed. Okay, and I haven't had a chance to speak to the Dunbar, but I have a lot of people who work for me at Dunbar, so they know to send kids this way.
Right. Okay.
So may I follow up with a question, Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
So you have a code for students from DCPS that are sending you applications?
Yes, ma'am.
And those students' applications are segregated from the applications of students who are paying a fee to apply?
Yes.
But some of those students are actually going to apply at the DCPS school.
Yes.
So how do you include them in your applicant pool? How do you count them?
Okay.
How do you identify them, and how do you count them in your applicant pool?
Sure. So there are 4 factors that go along with the applicant pool, trustee member. It's the application itself, a submission of a fee or a waiver. Then it's the high school transcript upon which you would find the weighted or unweighted cumulative GPA, and then the requisite letters of recommendations. Okay. Any student who applies to the University of the District with a fee or waive is automatically counted into the applicant pool once they get past the fee or the waive element. Okay? That's how we count them. Then we begin from a predictive element to then say that if you submit your transcript, you've applied for FAFSA, so we get that income information, then that's in level 1. You're really serious to come into the University of the District of Columbia because you're doing whatever it takes to enroll right away or to get the decision and an offer to make the decision of whether you want to come in the fall versus a student who would have applied today, then take 3 months to submit the following requisite items. That student we code 99, meaning he or she, and I'm getting too technical, so I don't want to.
No, but let me make sure, though, that the students who are in the applicant pool are the students who have 3 of the 4 criteria? They have met 3 of the 4 criteria?
So an applicant pool is just consists of someone who applies. So the applicant pool consists of anyone who applies.
Applies and pays a fee or has a waiver?
Yes. So once you get beyond that, you're an applicant.
But, okay, so why wouldn't that be a very big pool?
If
DCPS is sending you students and they have waivers, and that's the criterion by which you make a decision that they'll be in the applicant pool?
No. Let me be clear again.
Okay.
So if you were to apply today, Madam Trustee, and you paid your fee or you got a fee waiver, right?
Yes.
By definition, you are now an applicant for fall 2017.
Okay.
Okay? After that, there are three other items that are required for a decision to be made.
To be admitted.
To be admitted.
Okay,
or
that's where. So why, right. That's why I want to stay. So, you had at some point 7,000, and some of those 7,000 applicants would have been DCPS applicants.
The majority of them.
The majority. So where did they disappear to? I mean, you have 1,189 applicants in 2016. Where if a good bulk of those were the applicants from DCPS, where did they go?
Okay, so here's the other thing. Those applicants, ma'am, only came later on in March, in April.
Which are these applicants?
So the 7,000 that you that I referenced,
yeah,
that pool only became 7,000 because of the, as he mentioned, the latecomers.
Oh.
That's what they are.
Okay.
So that's why I told you the 7,000, when we really scaled through them,
yeah,
there were really only 25 to 3,000 serious applicants to the University of the District of Columbia.
Okay.
Because what was happening back then, Madam Trustee, was everybody would just apply and submit an application but would not complete the application.
Okay, I've got that. So why? So what is the date of the 1189?
February 24th.
February 24th?
Yes, compared to February 24, 2016.
It says February.
Yes.
And so your yield is determined by the February applicants?
No. My yield is determined by how many students have been accepted and those who actually enroll fall 2017.
Okay, so of those of those students that were in the DCPS pool,
mm-hmm,
you had some 3,000 of them that were serious. Is that what you just said?
The general pool, madam.
Yes.
The general pool consisted of freshmen from the District of Columbia.
Yeah.
Freshmen from Maryland.
Yeah.
Freshmen from other parts of the United States. Transfers. Readmits.
All in that pool.
All in that pool. Right.
All right, but how are they counted?
Okay. So they were counted, again, by someone who would have applied in that regard and then submit the following requisite items for a decision to be made.
But they seem to have disappeared from your numbers, is what I'm saying.
So, if no, I'm not. Okay, so what I want to say nicely is to use this.
Okay.
The 7,000 really wasn't a real applicant
okay,
pool.
Okay, but the 3,000 is a real yes. applicant pool. Where are they on this?
It's still generating because it's only March. It's only March right now.
Yeah. So, 3,000.
So, by June.
June.
By June.
I'll have 3,000.
We will have 3,000 applicants.
Okay, but I'm looking at 16.
Yeah, so at 16, this time last year, 16, right?
Right.
There were 1,728 students. This
so,
time...
Snapshot, so let me attempt.
Okay.
Let me attempt. So what we're trying to do is show at the same time frame, so not at the end of the recruiting cycle, but
okay.
So at the same time frame, we only had... I had a number in front of me.
1,700.
So when we get to the end of the recruiting cycle, we'll be closer to 3,000,
right,
which is where we were for 16.
Correct.
We actually expect to be more than that.
Okay, but all so that's, in other words, you haven't given us the yield for the March people because you haven't gotten it for 17.
There you go.
So
no, no,
you
no.
will then be...
Yeah,
no,
there's
that's
no yield.
Not true.
There's the
no yield.
Yield is student who finally enrolled.
No. The you will give us for March.
Yes.
Applicants admitted and confirmed.
That's it.
That's
and
it.
You will compare March.
Yes.
And
yes.
the reason we don't see them is it's not March for 17.
Correct.
I got it.
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah.
All we're trying to this is let me try to back up here. This is the first time, as far as I'm aware of, that we're trying to give the board more and more information about the enrollment process. So we have a lot, just like I talked about with this, we have a lot we can learn from these conversations about how we present, what we present, and how we present. So I take this as a learning opportunity of how we present, because I think what you were looking for is the end, and we're just trying to give you a snapshot of where we are right now compared to a year ago, not where we were, where we're going to end that at final. We will show you that
okay.
in at your August board meeting. We
okay.
definitely will show you that because that's when we'll be ready for the fall numbers.
All right.
But we're attempting to, frankly, and this is on the finances too, how we need to display and actually give you, and I know Ms. Franklin's working on a board portal where we can even give you more real-time information. We don't have to even wait to the board meeting. We can have you have information that comes to you, you know, in between the board meetings.
Okay.
And so that's
so
the kind of stuff we're
working on. I just didn't understand that I was going to get another number.
Oh, no question. This is an evolving process,
okay.
Trustee, so I appreciate your patience and your questions.
So we've had one of the charges that we gave the president
was to get us timely information so that we weren't 11th hour decision making. And as we work through this process, we've been trying to coordinate the information, you know, practice what we're trying to do, because we, in the past, we've been challenged with the facts and having to make a decision. Now we're working on what it's going to look like, I believe, in budget as well as in student enrollment, and how consistently and regularly we'll get the data so that we won't be guessing, so that we can, and what I've discussed with the leadership is that it be such that we can look at it and understand if there's an extreme deviation, we can ask questions about the extreme deviation, but if it follows a normal business pattern, we won't be surprised by the data. It will be have been presented in an orderly fashion with plenty of time for you to get a full grip on how the enrollment is going and how the budget is moving through. And so far, these preliminary stages have been preliminary.
They are, and we'll continue to refine this.
And I'm not trying to defend. I'm just trying
to... No, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I appreciate the feedback. I take this last few minutes as just, and even the question that the general asked me about some about the fact sheet is, as a means for us to improve how we communicate this information to the board.
And then how will we be communicating externally what our applicant pool is? Is from now going forward our applicant pool those people who have applied and received a waiver and or paid the fee? Because what I'm worried about is headlines that say, oh, you know, huge drop in applicants at UDC, when they don't really understand that what we actually done is actually better captured the students that are serious about applying to the university and increased the realization of those students applying to actually becoming at the university, as opposed to this broader number where it was made up of everyone.
So what
wasn't necessarily interested.
What we would do through the fact sheet is reverse the funnel. Mm-hmm. As you know, the funnel is up like this where you fill it. Mm-hmm. I would ask us to reverse it and go mm-hmm. from what has been yielding mm-hmm. so we can show the longitudinal and regressional effect of actually having a more manageable, real serious pool mm-hmm. and what we've done at each level of the life cycle mm-hmm. to generate interest further, maintain it through the cycle, and then ultimately get them to enroll.
Okay.
Once, and so that's all going to be procured and kept on the fact sheet eventually.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, but I think the other part of...
Quick question, Mr. Sanchez. So... You mentioned that you got some information from the Department of Education, and that's where you're basing your – that's the premises in which you're making your assumptions going forward. Is that correct? Is that a correct –
So, no, I didn't make any assumptions. What this is basically telling you an update of whom we currently have in the applicant pool, those who've been accepted and those who've been confirmed. The goal for 2017 is 2,063 new students. So that's the goal for fall 2017.
So context, that number again?
Context that, do I tell them the fall?
So last fall, it was 1909, and the fall before that was 1880. So every year we've been going up. Mm-hmm. Compared to the first year when I came in 14, it was only 1370. So from 1370 to 1880, 1909, so mm-hmm. then it's only, now it's 2063.
But I think, Trustee Mills, I think if I understood your question, if I'm missing it, help me. The premise of the smaller pool is a Department of Education number that says, and there's not just Department of Education, it's a lot of information, says that from the Census Bureau and everywhere, that the pool of applicants across the country is shrinking. And part of the challenge we have here at the University of Columbia, in my opinion, is we're in a much more competitive game now for the students, and as I think as Trustee Jarvis will attest, you know, there's a lot of buying students going on out there, and how we compete with that, I don't have an answer for yet. I'll be honest with you, some of that is DC up, but that's not the total answer. I don't pretend that it is, because the students that were somewhat, you know, that some universities would have seen as marginal, they're going to go after them even more aggressively, and those would have been our more core students. More and more universities are going to go after them, and so that shrinking of the pool is causing more competition to happen, particularly in the middle. The top tier is always going to be, you know, fairly taken care of, and the bottom set of students, you know, we have our community college, and we'll serve them as we continue. But I think that middle, I think Dwight has a term for them. I can't get his term. He has a term for them.
Murky middle.
Thank you. Those are the ones that the competition is going to become, I would argue, and I think Dwight agrees, is going to become extremely intense for.
My
and that pool is shrinking.
Yes.
My question for in terms of where is he getting his data from to make these assumptions or assertions as to where the Department of Education, and just in my thought process, you're taking information from outside and you're saying, based on this information, this is what's going to happen, or this is what it's going to look like in the next 5 or 10 years. And that, I mean, we saw that recently. The president took the information that he was wiretapped, and from an outside source, not necessarily the Department of Education, was very credible. Mm-hmm. But again, are we not studying this ourselves and coming up with data?
Yeah, I've studied this myself. This is beyond just the department. I think my trustee. I think this ain't new news. This has been going on for the last couple of years that this pool is shrinking.
In the District of Columbia, the high schools are highly underpopulated, yeah. And a lot of them. The big ones are still big, but there are a lot more smaller ones
that have capacity.
And the competition is fierce. And I don't want to lose sight of our mission, which is to get the student and keep them, which is what we've been working on. So our mission is still to get them in here. So even though we're going through these different machinations, we're still looking for that student who wants to go to college and helping to find a way in and through.
Yes, so to answer, let me just to close on your question. The way the enrollment goal of 2063 was derived, trustee, was through predictive modeling, as well as a look of the historical past 3 years of internal data, reconciled or compared to national data to find what we call the niche market for the University of the District of Columbia, mm-hmm. And that's how these projections were made or arrived at. So that you don't think it was just arbitrary or just haphazardous.
Okay.
Yeah, great question. So this is, I don't see Dr. Summers here, the whole separate conversation around, these are my terms now, the certificate-based, you know, non-degree-seeking students. We need to, there's a whole conversation about how we better integrate those numbers, yeah. Better integrate the systems, better integrate enrollment management. We're not there yet, but yes, these are just about the traditional degree-seeking students.
And they are full-time or part-time?
Well, we don't know which. We don't know, obviously.
Because they haven't begun to.
Yes, ma'am. Right. Exactly correct. We hope, but only a point. Correct me, Dwight, mm-hmm. Ms. Sanchez. We are seeing a shift this last fall of the mix of part-time to full-time towards full-time. So we're seeing that shift slowly happening, and I think through the work of Dr. Latham, he can speak to it in his casual outfit here. some of his work is getting at, you know, how do we start to move that needle in that direction?
Well, because, you know, the paradox is if you make admission standards higher, you get more students. That is the paradox in higher ed.
That is true,
yeah.
And that would be appropriate at a traditional institution.
Yeah.
Given our makeup, however, and the quality of the applicant pool, we have to be a bit more liberal in our approach and appeal to get a piece of everyone that makes up the profile of the DC prospects.
Exactly. No, but still, if you make it tougher to get in, you'll get more people who want to get in. And you're getting more people. So how do you account for that?
Well, if I were to do that, I don't think I would have a job at the end of the day.
No, this is. You remember, when you and I first met, I said this is part of the conversation that will be an interesting conversation here with your other board colleagues. And I think there's a range of thoughts of how we balance. I mean, even the DC up, frankly, was a long conversation. If the board remember, are we banding our mission by even doing DC up? And I think we all agree that we're not. We can have both those DC up students and, frankly, the student that needs a little bit extra help. We can have both at the University District of Columbia. And I think we're still struggling with how to do both. And I don't pretend that we figured it out, right. but we know we've got to figure out a way to do both.
And internal pathways would be, institution pathways may be the best way. Mm-hmm. We may not garnish the high-level entry students out of the DCPS system that we need. But if we can get them into a certificate granting program,
mm-hmm.
then work on them and create an internal pathway over to the flagship, I think we will get there.
Excuse me. On that discussion, there are two pathways in the UDC. One is the freshman first-time entry, and one is if and when you have trouble or situation at the university that's your first choice, you come back and you can come back and enroll in UDC. We've been taking students from that audience. Mm-hmm. And they've turned into very successful, very gifted people who have served the city and the school district by having a second option of coming back here, even after going off on the scholarship route to big major universities and for whatever reasons having to come back and recommit by get their college degree through the university and go on with the rest of their lives just as if they never missed a beat. That's another audience that we still have to keep in our
target. So you're talking about the readmits.
Yeah. Yes, the readmits, you know, and then you got it. Transfers, readmits, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
But they had a circumstance at another university, and they came home. And home is saying, we still want you.
Right.
So question, and this is just my own ignorance. On the vouchers that the students get from DCPS.
Waivers?
The waivers, sorry. Those are freely available?
No. Okay. We create them because you don't want just everybody to have them.
Okay.
So with specific sites,
okay,
we create what they are with conversations with the administration there,
okay,
and it feeds right into our system.
Okay, excellent. Yeah. And then I would have expected, this is back to your chart, and hopefully we can get you back to your presentation, but that we would have seen a larger increase in the community college given the larger trends that are going on with community college populations. Where students are starting at community colleges and then moving over to 4 years as a function of economics.
That
is so true, provided the national trend and the traditional model of enrollment. Mm-hmm. But given the different type of students whom we recruit here at the university, mm-hmm, one of the things that I'm also starting to incorporate in our analysis is what is called behavioral patterns. And Troy alluded to, Mr. Silvala alluded to it most initially, and that is, we still haven't been able to change when students indicate when they're going to apply.
Yeah, exactly.
So you will see an upsurge of nearly 30% for the community college, mm-hmm, by early, late May. Then you'll see that decline or level off by July. Mm-hmm. Then you'll see an upsurge, mm-hmm, for the flagship as a result of two reasons. Those who had other aspirational choices probably did not pan out, or they found out at that time the financial aid for those other schools are not enough, mm-hmm, to maintain. So then and only then will you see those increases accordingly. Uh-huh. And I've paid attention to it for the 3 years. And what I found is, and I haven't shared this with Troy yet, but those students actually come for only a semester, if not a full year, because they just want to start and then take that to go to where they ultimately want to be. Yeah. So all of those behavior patterns and stuff make it very difficult, because I know you come from a traditional institution makeup, more or less, to try to fit that model. So what I'm doing is I'm taking all of the segments here and trying to give a cogent picture of how it works here.
So, I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, it's a good point you raised, because we've been in the press of late, you know, with various articles, what have you. But what I still don't think we do a good enough job doing is just explaining what you've just explained, is just how differently and how uniquely situated we are, and how we have constraints and obstacles that other four-year institutions simply do not have.
Right. Right.
But yet everyone just says, look at this university next to that university.
Right.
Can I segue into that?
Yes.
In the matter of transparency, will you be putting, now that you've explained to us what an applicant is and the process that you have in your system currently, in your CRM, this is what the process of an application system looks like. Is that something you're going to put on the website? Is you going to tell the public that when you apply, these are the criteria that we're looking for, and once you've met all of this, you become a full applicant in our system, and we'll be able to render a decision then. Is that something you're going to be explaining to and
all
be
of that.
Advertising, putting out there so the public will know what it is? Because I think a lot of the ways you talk about is the issue of transparency and knowing what happens.
Okay, that's an interesting term, transparency. Nevertheless, trustee, it's on the website by student type, and each student type tells each applicant or prospect what are the requisites for admissions as that particular student type, and the timeline it would actually take to be rendered or receive a decision. So, for example, if you are a freshman, you just basically have to do an application, pay the fee, test scores, and transcripts, if you were a freshman. If you were a transfer student, for the purposes of financial aid, you'd have to submit your high school transcript for eligibility, your institution of higher learning transcript, so mm-hmm, we can do the transfers, and then a confirmation, and then the fee. A graduate student has to submit all of the transcripts from the current institutions where he or she had procured a bachelor's degree, mm-hmm, or a master's and wishes to get another one here, his undergraduate profile or documents as well, and then the letters of recommendation, and then the fee, and then the letter of interest to the respective program. A non-degree student has to do the same thing, but we don't look at the test scores because we just want to make sure that you're currently at another institution and that if you're enrolling in a degree granting program and it's also eligible for Title IV, we can document that you are eligible by the Department of Education. So those are various cadre of student types, and I just explicated to you all of what needs to happen.
If I may, Trustee, maybe I don't know how many more questions, but at least try to get to a point of, I think, very positive news. It's a lead from your question about the community college. Not only what Mr. Sanchez said, but as you know, we've had a couple of programs that we're trying to get back, and we hope to get them back. But we just got news today that two programs that this board approved, the Department of Ed has approved us putting them in the fall. One is biomed. We will have a biomed program. And what was the other one?
The adult master's.
Thank you.
Education.
Oh, excellent.
So this happened just a couple hours ago, so we haven't even announced it yet. So you're the first to hear about it. He just sent me an email just a couple hours ago about it.
How does that hit how do you announce that?
From an institutional point of view, we'll put something out here, obviously, tomorrow about it. The deans have already, particularly I know Biomed, has already begun the process internally. So now it's kind of in Dwight and Dean. Dwight and the dean will now be more aggressive about actually going out into recruiting and getting students for those programs for the fall.
I guess the question is, are we doing a public
release? A press release.
I think the president, I'm sure, will. I haven't had a chance to tell him. So y'all know before the president.
Okay. I hope you don't pay for that.
I probably will.
How that normally happens is we advertise it on the website as a part of our now programs eligible for Title IV support, meaning you enroll and you get federal aid for those programs. That's what it means now.
Well, and that's the kind of thing that that was not acknowledged in the Washington Post report, which is that. Mm-hmm. The Title IV issues were resolved, and this is yet a further indication. Right. So, I mean, the follow-up, you're going to talk about that, Mr. Chairman, so I'm just going to go according to your agenda.
Yes. but also to my previous point, I hope when we have this biomed program, that gets pushed to the high schools that have the STEMs.
Yes.
So that they'll know as well.
So another thing that Troy, Mr. Silva,
Troy's
I know
it was
Troy.
Okay.
Nevertheless, what we're going to do with that, right, Monday is we have the portal that allows us to reach out to 4,000 high school counselors. Mm. We will basically send a correspondence to those 4,000 high school counselors and simply say, we have a biomedical program at the bachelor's degree science level. Mm-hmm. Here you go. And let us know who's interested, and then we started to engage in that level. That's one way to get it out.
And do we have a symposium where we bring them here?
Yeah, we did that last year. We're going to do it again this year.
Excellent.
Okay. Good.
All right. Back to your.
No. So the second page.
Wait, hold on. Trustee Shelton, and then we're going to let you get back to your presentation.
I promise. I'm going to try to be good.
All right.
How many principals have you identified a conversation with?
I personally have had a conversation with eight principals.
Okay. I want to emphasize to you and your team.
Right.
Counselors are not going to be released unless the principal makes the exception to let them go.
Right.
Okay, and it's critical to get the principal on board some kind of way. I know you've been talking to the counselors because I've talked to a couple of them, but the key person in that building is still the principal,
right. Mm-hmm.
And he or she needs to be on board with releasing the counselor to come here, and you need to touch them,
right.
Okay, and just like you're touching the counselor, you need to touch the principal, because if they don't understand who we are, they're not going to think very much about the counselor being released to come to an event on company time.
Sure.
Yeah, okay. Trustee, on that, I don't know when I said earlier about the role the cabinet is going to play in the mission. So part of that, part of the real point I really should have made is the schools that I've been assigned, I'm supposed to go and develop a relationship with that principal.
Yes. Correct.
And then Adventure Time will also be working with the specific deans where there's a big demand, say, in engineering or business. And so we 100% agree. So I just want to say this. It's part of the plan that Mr. Sanchez has us on.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. So let's go to the second page.
Oh, you mean we haven't gotten
it? No, yeah. So all I want to do on the second page is focus on the financial aid. So again, so for the new trustee member, last year this time we were just finishing with the A133. We had done an upgrade of our banner system, and we were only able to, at that time, make awards for 450 students. Okay, that's last year this time, to give you context.
Title IV awards?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yeah. This year, we're preparing for the same thing, but we've doubled our aid, or rather our awards. We're now basically at 920. Okay. So we've doubled that this year. And also what you can see is we have over 4,000. So you remember the applicant pool in the front trustees? It says 1,248, right? Yeah. Where we are this time, February 24th. But if you look on the back, it shows you how many students have done a FAFSA for the University of the District of Columbia. So you see the difference in the numbers, right?
Yeah.
So here's what we do now. On the front end, with those 1,200 plus, we send them 16 types of communications, right? Because we have 5,000 applicants through the financial aid information, not only do we send them that additional, we send them that 16, we send another 8. So when you add everything together, what this really tells you, Madam Trustee, is we have 5,000 applicants who have submitted the FAFSA, and UDC is a school of choice. If you add the 1,248 that's not duplicated, you actually have over 6,000 applicants in theory, if that makes sense to you, okay?
Yep.
So what this does now is it gives me and my team another pipeline to cultivate and get them into the applicant pool. So because they did the FAFSA, which says UDC is an interest, they haven't done the application for consideration.
Mm.
So that's another pipeline.
Students do a FAFSA before they apply?
Because the FAFSA is different from an application admission.
Yeah, because they're doing it for whoever.
For whomever, right.
Yeah.
And they're allowed to do 10 schools.
Yep.
So what that means to me, that what it tells me, there are 4,993 students in the United States, and UDC falls into 1 of 10.
Yep.
Okay? That's a good thing. As you can also see, so far to date, of the 920, we've awarded roughly $12 million. And of that $12 million, 4 million have accepted aid. So that's how we're doing it differently this year. So now I can find those who have accepted the
of
aid.
Of that
11.79, almost $12 million of that we've offered, almost 3.5 have accepted that aid.
Right.
That we've offered to them.
3.5.
3.4 million.
3.4, not 4.
So a little less than 25.
But that's not people.
No, that's dollars.
No, those are dollars.
Yeah, dollars.
But you're saying they're, you said they accept.
Yes, so they have to accept the offer.
Each of those students has to accept the offer of whatever portion is in the $3 million for.
Okay. So the Department of Ed tells me, Dwight, of all these students, we've done an assessment, right? And all of these students in total are eligible for roughly $12 million. And of these $12 million, Dwight, 3.4 million has been accepted, and these are the students. So I can find those students now, and I can actually tell Troy and the president, Mr. President and Mr. Stovall, these students are highly likely to come because I'm getting the information ahead, and I'm able to be more intentional and more predictive.
And what's that number of students?
4,993 is those application we've received.
But the 17,
no, I'm talking about the total aid accepted to date.
Oh, 4,000. So it's 3.4 million at that time.
Right. And that translates to how many students?
Students.
Oh, I don't have that number right now. I don't have that number, right. I don't have that number.
Because I know it's a fourth of the aid, but I didn't know if it
was. Yeah, so I don't have that number right now.
So to give particularly Trustee Jarvis just to some why this is such an important improvement.
This is
huge improvement. It may look like from what you normally said, we used to be talking about this type of information in August.
Mm.
Right.
we'd be
talking.
Yeah, right before school would open, we'd be talking about that. It wouldn't even be $3 million of aid. It'd be like $1 million of aid had been accepted the day before school opened.
Got it.
So that's why the other board members was like, okay, this is improvement, and we're not where we want to be, but this is moving us in the direction we want to be. Yeah, where we were. Yeah, thank you. So that's why it's that's the context for you.
Good. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So then. The last thing, it just tells you where the enrollment is as of the purge for spring semester. It's 4677.
What is a purge?
A purge. Okay, so the purge trustee is basically the removal of students who have not taken care of their financial responsibility to be a full matriculant into the university.
Okay.
So we purge them, and then we give them what is called a reinstatement period of 5 days where they have to come up with 25% of the balance.
This is the currently enrolled students.
Currently enrolled students, right.
Okay.
And then those who made the 25% payment have until the end of March, roughly the first week of April, to fully resolve, or else they'll be restricted from enrolling in the summer or the forthcoming fall.
Okay.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
And then lastly, it tells you the graduation numbers that are anticipated. So last year, UDC graduated its largest class last year, which was roughly 700 plus. This year, we're in target of 889 students to be graduated.
Just going back to the Purge, how do our Purge numbers compare with other schools, other public schools?
Quite frankly, we're better. Because at most, at those private institutions, what they do is they will probably purge roughly a 500 student. They'll probably purge 500 and get maybe 300, maybe 30 to 100 to reinstate. We will purge 900 and get more than half of them to re-enroll.
So let me go ahead and make my statement about Purge. Okay. I don't like Purge. I don't like the whole process of purging.
You'd like to ask them for money?
I do, trustee, but they have an obligation to pay. Now, our obligation, and we're getting there, that's why this part of it, is to more timely get them their financial aid packages, uh-huh. More timely get them their notices to pay, and hold them accountable for paying. We haven't done our part.
We were a factor in their purge because we couldn't deliver it?
No question. We were a problem because we weren't putting together their financial aid packages until August.
Yeah.
Money wasn't coming until after the due date.
Exactly correct.
And we were having to carry them. Yeah. They had no money, but we still were carrying them.
Exactly correct. Mm-hmm. Trustee is exactly correct. And so this is all. I always like to say it's all connected. As we get better, we can hold the students more accountable for their fiscal obligations. And look, if you go to, you talked about other schools. The reality of it is they do a purge before the semester starts. Because if you don't pay your bill, you just don't show up. Mm-hmm. And this is tied to a conversation we're going to have about 42. As we get housing, you don't want to, I've been at places where you've had housing and done this purge and literally had to kick students out of housing. That is not a place I want this university to be at. I want us to get our systems together so when we do have housing, that we are purging before they show up in our housing and they've taken care of their obligations and we're comfortable with that. You do not want a student in your housing for 6-7 weeks. And then asking them to leave.
Right.
That's just not a place I want. You talk about a headline, sir.
They have no place to go.
That's not a headline we want.
Homelessness. Yes, yeah. Right into homelessness.
So that's why this is all
staying in a roommate's room, hiding out in a roommate's room, yeah. A friend's room. Rather.
Have you concluded your presentation, Mr. Sanchez?
I have, indeed.
Well, thank you. It was very informative. The trustees had no questions. I'm sorry about that.
That's fine.
But I think very good, and congrats on the improvement, the process improvements, and the information improvements. It's really very helpful, and it helps to create predictive analytics so that you can do everything even better. So we appreciate that. Thank you so much. All right, the next item on the agenda is the Fields LLC Memorandum of Understanding.
Yes, I do not have, Mr. Chairman, anything for the committee. This is more of just an informational update, and I'll give a quick update for some of the trustees that don't have. So we clearly have our two soccer fields in the back, one of which is currently being occupied by the trailers from our friends at Murch Elementary School for another year and a half. We had negotiations prior to that.
Another year and a half?
It ain't over yet. They
didn't
move those temporaries yet.
I shouldn't have said that on speaker, huh? We had negotiations with a consortium of soccer leagues here in the area. Many of them are merged parents that they've organized themselves as calling themselves Field LLC. And so they had raised amongst themselves about, $3.9 million to turn the two grass fields into two turf fields with lighting, concession stands, I mean, a real quality, and that we would have shared in the use of that field and would have given us a close to NC2A regulation field and then a practice field. Obviously, with the merch being there, that's caused us challenges in executing on that plan, but we still plan on. So what I'm here to tell you is that what we've had with them is just kind of an understanding with those three leagues through Field LLC that we will work to make this happen. And so what will be coming to this committee probably, hopefully, in the very near future is a definitive agreement that spells out the terms of how we're going to renovate the fields, timing, the economics obviously associated with that, and then how we're going to share the fields and chips and fields. So it's more of an announcement of, I know this has been a conversation for quite a while. It was part of the conversation. We were actually talking about merch. I just want to let this committee know that we've not lost sight of that goal to create quality athletic fields for our student athletes.
Okay.
Have you have a legal binding agreement with them?
Right now, we do not have. Again, this is just an MOU. It is not binding on either party, but the contract that we're coming to this committee will be binding.
Trustee Shelton, this whole merch support system was connected by the offer to do this field, was supported strongly by the commitment to make a field that our students could use that would meet their criteria. I am somewhat disappointed to hear that it's still a conversation. I do say that the field has been mowed and processed in some way, but it is still not a college-level field, and we are paying to use other facilities for our students, transportation and rental. And none of that is included in the monies that we receive for athletics for merch, the merch acquisition. And this parent group delaying or not following through on that commitment has, again, concerns me greatly,
yeah.
Which is what it did at the beginning.
So let me say a couple of things I was remiss in saying. So allow me to spend a little bit more time than I should have. So number one, the group, the three, and Councilman Hardwick can chime in or say if I miss anything. The merch being there delayed the whole process because it created a new timing thing. And what we were trying to do, because the initial plan would have frankly created some fiscal challenges for the university in the way it was initially structured. So we think we now have a structure in place with this group that minimizes those fiscal challenges to the university. Allow me, if you may. Number one. Number two, puts it on a timeline that's more aligned to when we anticipate, and not anticipate, when merch will be gone. I don't want to say anticipate, when merch will be gone. Because before the problem was, when could we get to the field? The third thing I'll say, and if I have missed something between Eric and Karen, please correct me. We are going to invest, trustee, in upgrade and actually getting the field better quality right now. Eric's got a plan in the next, help me, Eric.
Thursday,
to get the field to a far better state than it is currently right now. So we've made that commitment to our student and to upgrade that field in anticipation of it being a little bit longer until we can get to the synthetic fields. Did I miss anything?
Okay. Did you have a follow-up?
Just a brief, I want you to correct me if I misunderstood. Mm-hmm. The original approach was they were going to do all of that so that they would have access to a field on the weekends for their programs. Mm-hmm. Now it is reduced down to we're going to do something, and eventually they're going to do the synthetic field.
No, so let me try again. So if we had started right now, right, mm-hmm. the problem would have been we would have done the field that's closest to the gym. Mm-hmm. And the problem for them economically is to do two construction would have escalated the cost dramatically.
Yes.
And that escalation would have fallen to us.
Why?
That's the challenge. They only have $4 million. So basically, here's the real point. They got $4 million.
Okay.
And they're going to do whatever they're going to do for $4 million. So for $4 million. That's all.
How long?
No, it's not for how long. It's they got $4 million. Actually, they want to back out is the truth. So they got $4 million. If we had gone right now, we wouldn't have gotten the second field done.
I think what Trustee Shelton is saying is the opportunity cost of not acting is being borne by us. And why wasn't the cost of merch that $4 million so that we could have at least had the one field done? Why is it that we're not only getting our two fields done, but then the cost to get anything done is still being borne by us?
Why do you think it's – I guess I'm not – maybe I'm missing the what's being borne by us.
You know what? They're offering a synthetic field, which is a wonderful thing.
Two synthetic fields.
Yeah, well, again, a synthetic field.
Yeah.
Now, these synthetic fields will be students. Well, they must – one of them must be – a university-sized field.
NC2A, yes, sir.
Okay, which means that you can take it and make it into two smaller youth-sized fields.
Okay.
Okay, so when they say two, unless Eric, they have, in order to make a legitimate arena, a soccer field, a multi-sports field, like they're describing, you're talking about one big one, which we use, which the court is laid out in two different directions.
Yes, sir.
This delay, all of this stirred up when they couldn't find a place for merch.
I agree with
you. And the sugar was set out there for the merch deal. We took the sugar. We accepted the concept. We're now looking forward to two fields. But at the end of the day, are we going to have a college-level field for our college-level athletes in two, at least two sports and four teams to participate?
The answer is yes. Yes.
Okay. So we will. Yes. Have, okay. I thought yes. you said it would be close to. So it will satisfy the requirement.
No question. We're gonna. We are going. I apologize if again. Yeah. We will have one NC2A field and then what we're calling a practice field.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I wasn't hearing. That.
I apologize if it's on me.
They will both will be lighted so that the community can use them when the school is not in use of.
At that night. But
and
yes,
that's the real deal.
That's the real deal.
When the school is not in use.
And when the school doesn't need it, it's available for the community. Yeah. And I suggest, and our schedule would dictate what days.
You got it. You got absolutely. It. And that's part. That's one of the many negotiating points we still have to get to.
That's a fundamental rule in all building use in the District of Columbia, is that it's the school has first option on any event in the building. Mm-hmm. So,
I don't disagree. Okay, did I miss something? Did I mean, y'all can chime in. Did I miss something?
Okay.
If I misspoke, I apologize.
So I heard two fields, and I didn't hear one legitimate field.
Okay. No, we don't.
And so there's no way that one field can be done now?
Well, go ahead, Karen.
So the original idea, you'll recall, was to do two fields.
Right.
Then we were asked to have merch on one. Two fields, one would be NCAA compliant, and the other would be upgraded substantially, but a practice field. Then when we were asked to host merch here, the board reluctantly agreed, and that meant that the construction for the two fields couldn't take place at the same time for at least one of the fields by us. But so at least one of the fields was going to have to be shifted off by 2 years or so.
Right.
And so the problem was that you would mobilize to do field one, demobilize, and then 2 years from now, you'd have to remobilize and demobilize. That was going to increase the cost of construction because you couldn't just do them at the same time.
Which is the true cost of having merch here.
Which is the true cost of having merch here, and that was a risk that was being handed back and forth between the parties and was an impediment, and we could not make a firm commitment about the date certain on which we could deliver the fields for construction because of the merch factor.
Right.
Right? And so they wanted to proceed on essentially the schedule we had before, and we couldn't commit to that contractually because the land is not available. So now, as I understand it, there's going to be an improvement to the field that is available for work as an interim measure.
It's available for
what? It is available for use, and it's not occupied by merch right here. I think it's the practice field, if I'm not mistaken. And then the goal is to enter into the definitive agreement and have that construction take place in essentially one phase, but somewhat delayed, so that it's timed for when merch is going to be gone.
So we need merch in order to have the NCAA-compliant field, or is what the land that's available now insufficient to create?
We need merch off.
Right, so we need that off in order to get the full land that we need to create our NCAA-compliant.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay.
I would like to ask that the board get a document which says in this year, in this budget submission, we plan to have the use of a field and here are the costs associated with it. So that would probably be 2019?
Help me understand what you're –
You know, all I'm hearing is uncertainty, and what I'd like to hear is some certainty that we have a plan financially for when we will recover the field, and that we will be budgeting money in, you know, 2018 or 2019.
We're already spending money now to do the plan. So we are spending our capital dollars to actually develop the plans.
Okay.
We're
and that was in 2017 budget?
It's our capital budget.
It's in the 2017 capital budget?
Well, the capital budget is a multi-year budget.
Yeah. Okay.
And so we already are doing that right now. We plan on delivering those. That's part of the agreement. We'll be delivering those plans, and they're working with us to make sure that the plans meet what their needs are. we're going to deliver those plans to them. That's our investment in this. They will take those plans with their $4 million and turn that into the fields themselves.
So when do you think the plan will be ready?
Eric
Thompson, VP for Real Estate and Facilities. End of the summer, going into the fall, some of the determining factor on that is our architect has identified some cost savings measures that change what they feel LLC initially anticipated. So mm-hmm. agreement on making those changes to save costs is some of that flexibility on whether it's the end of the summer, early fall, and not being able to give you an exact date, but definitely before the end of the calendar year, we have completed construction documents ready for Field LLC to award a contractor to build the project.
Oh, and then after that, what period of time do they then have?
Well, then we have to wait till Merch is gone. See, Merch
just
leaves.
What, fall 2018?
2018.
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out. So they already know that their end date is 2018?
Yeah, we have an agreement with Merch.
Is there a holdover? I can't remember.
Yes, you're trying.
There's a problem.
You're trying.
There's a holdover paragraph.
And the holdover paragraph.
If I recall, there's a holdover clause. If they're not ready, if the construction at Merch Elementary is actually delayed or something like that, they have the ability to stay here, and then they would pay additional rent if they pass 2018.
And it is a higher rent.
It's a higher rent.
Significantly higher rent should they cross that date. I think one point from a logistical standpoint that I should make, when the idea of having the one field done while Merch was there was floated, we didn't have a full architect on board. Now that we have an architect on board and we're truly looking at the logistics mm-hmm. of trying to do the field in such mm-hmm. a tight site with mm-hmm. six-year-olds mm-hmm. next to us, the risk is too great.
Yes.
It is better for us to wait until they are gone and do both fields at one time.
Okay. And one follow-up. Yeah. The underground systems have not reflected any damage thus far?
They have not.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, but when, may I ask one more question?
Sure.
When does Merch want to have its own facility ready?
Fall 2018, they're supposed to be out.
Yeah.
Fall 2018. So this is the drop-dead date that we're looking for.
Well, I mean, ideally, yes. But if there's construction delays over there, obviously they can't move the kids out. And then if they can't move the kids out, they're not going to move them out in November. They would wait until a natural break, which would...
Christmas.
Would be the holidays, winter holidays, or would it be the spring holidays?
Okay.
So they have the ability to be there because they don't want to disrupt the school year in the event that there's construction
delays. Okay, so somebody over here monitors that, right?
Yes.
There is. And I'm going to... Has there been any... In the plans of the District of Columbia west of 16th, D.C. Public Schools west of 16th Street, what are some of the other schools that are on their renovation strategy plan?
For DCPS?
Yes.
There are quite a few
which leads to my point.
Right.
The facility that they have built there is the finest demountable system I've seen in the country.
Ooh.
The Merch facility.
The Merch facility.
It is the... newest buildings, the finest interior structure, the best lighting, best air conditioning, best heating I've ever seen in a temporary, and that's at schools around the country. Taking that down with all of the projects that are in their hopper on this side to be fixed distresses me, okay, with no real data. That's why I asked you what you know about. Because the facility is flexible enough to handle any audience and strong enough to survive a long time.
So, without committing the board to any action, I think that the board is very interested in making sure that the university students have access to the university and the facilities that they are paying for. And so while we've agreed to be a good fellow agency with respect to Merch Elementary, we would be hard-pressed after Merch is done to willingly agree to allow another institution to step into those spaces because we want to give the students the benefit of their bargain. Yeah.
Can you say it better?
Yeah.
All right. Way to go, Mr. Ben.
Okay. All righty.
Well, thank you very much. Two very informative presentations that drew a lot of questions that we didn't anticipate.
Hey, okay. This is the preliminary group.
This is the preliminary. Okay. Well, we have,
do this again.
As you can tell, and as I've already discussed, we have two items that we're going to be taking into executive session. And so what I'd like to do is entertain a motion to enter into executive session. All right. It has been moved. Is there a second?
You're the second.
Oh, I will second. So actually, we're actually not even in. We were thinking that Trustee Felton would be here by now, so we can have a discussion, but there's no need to have a vote here because we're not even in an official meeting.
No, wait. Is it still that you have to, someone has to ask the question for a quorum? Is that still part of the Roberts process? Mm-hmm. And since no one is asking about a quorum,
we could... Okay. You two can do it.
Okay.
In my opinion. And I'll take full responsibility.
In my opinion, if we act and somebody asks if there was a quorum, we'd be in trouble.
Okay. Yes, that's correct.
Right. Well, at any event, this meeting for which there was no quorum is now adjourned. And the trustees that do remain will have a non-official meeting, a discussion about other topics, since we do not have the ability to generate a quorum right now. Thank you very much for your attendance. I appreciate it. All right.